Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast, brought to you from the studios of CBS Interactive. I'm Tim Burrows. Joining me as usual, Mumbrella Deputy Editor Camille Alacon.
Hello.
And Scott Rohde of PR agency House Party.
Hi, Tim.
Today,
Communications Minister Stephen Conroy goes nuclear on Google and Facebook.
The love story of the iPad and the Australian newspaper. And why we won't be seeing the ABC's iView app on the iPad until later this year.
In TV, we look at this week's ratings, another reality TV show. This time it's about parking inspectors. And the Gruen transfer back on air next month.
And still with TV, Foxtel, the first out of the starting blocks for 3D TV. But who was actually watching? And say hello to Google TV.
It's World Cup fever, and we look at a Nike ad that's had 6 million views on YouTube in just 1 week.
And we reveal the winner of April's Mumbrella Ad of the Month competition.
Now, this week we saw Communications Minister Stephen Conroy launch quite a comprehensive attack, I would say, on both Google and Facebook. He called Google a bunch of hypocrites and criticised Facebook for what he says is its complete disregard for users' privacy. Tim, what actually prompted this attack?
Yeah, this is very strange. Now, this is one that I took one for the team, and I mean the internet generally here, in that I plowed through 131 pages of the transcript of the Senate estimates hearing, which took place on Monday, to get to the good stuff, which of course was in the final four pages.
Always
is in these things. But you draw a lot of conclusions about Stephen Conroy when you read about his performance. So this was him being questioned about all sorts of aspects of his portfolio over the whole day. But the really juicy stuff came right at the very end when he just went into a massive rant about Google and Facebook. But the thing that didn't necessarily come across in the early coverage of it was this was obviously pre-planned because he was quoting loads of stuff. Yeah. So it wasn't a sort of off the cuff, you know, ministers, you know, a bit of a bad temper, says something about privacy.
Soundbite.
It was
more than that.
It was planned. Yeah. You know, he went up with studs showing. So he kind of used all of this information that he says suggests that Google are hypocritical in complaining about the filter, for instance. They're sort of saying, you know, on the one hand, they've got fairly arbitrary policies for YouTube, yet they're calling for openness for the government. Some people, and you know, even when he was being questioned, people were saying, well, are you sure that you can compare government to a private corporation? And the two things are quite different. The key question was, what would you put, and this is what he said, what would you prefer, a corporate giant who's answerable to no one and motivated solely by profit making the rules of the internet, or a democratically elected government with all the checks and balances in place?
Well, the problem right there is that although they're democratically elected, he's gone off in this campaign on his own without MD actually having a vote on it when it boils down to it. And this is my personal opinion, but I think he's a complete loon.
Well, we asked the internet what they thought of it. So we created a poll, asked the question, who do you want to look after the internet? Either A, a corporate giant answerable to no one and motivated solely by profit making the rules, or B, Stephen Conroy. 93% of people went for A.
To be honest, the internet seemed to survive quite well being this kind of free area that everybody does, you know, what they want. But he's even admitted that the filter doesn't work. He's admitted that there's problems with the filter, that people can get easily around the filter. That when it boils down to it, you know, he's creating a censorship that only what China and Iraq have in the world at the moment, pretty much.
Yeah, I suppose one of the things that did, I guess, occur to me as I was reading through the transcript is this attack on Google and Facebook, it, you know, doesn't really take away or add to the arguments around the filter. But at the same time, he, you know, he does point out that there are big privacy issues with both of them. You know,
absolutely.
Even this week, for comparison.
But do you know what? Everybody knows that. We all know that there's privacy problems. Mm-hmm. You know, Facebook come out today with their statement.
Yes, it's worth pointing out. Literally, as we're recording this podcast, in the last couple of hours beforehand, Facebook have changed their settings.
Yeah, but when it boils down to it, he's in the government. You know, he should be listening to the people, and the voice of the people at the moment states, we don't want this damned filter. And he's just putting his fingers in his ears and then attacking anybody that even suggests to him that the fella's wrong. And that's where I have an issue with it. Somebody needs to just grab him and say, look, stop it. Switch it off. Stop looking like an idiot.
What about his argument, like playing a bit devil's advocate, because no one in this room appears to agree with him, when he says that 97% of every internet user in the UK goes through a filter similar to the one they're discussing? Is what he's,
yeah,
what
that
he
was
said.
New.
That's what he said.
Yes, I saw that quote from him.
No,
yeah.
He did say, though, we have a slightly broader content classification. What does that slightly broader mean?
Yeah, in the UK, it's actually very different. It's not even a filter per se in the UK, because ISPs have their own thing. And Europe's trying to introduce a kind of, I know they're trying to introduce a three strikes and you're out policy with the movie companies and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And the problem is the UK situation at the moment is that one of the ministers, David Mandelson, what's his first name again?
Peter
Mandelson, who's a House of the Lords representative, not even elected, had private meetings with David Geffen, one of the record producers and movie producers, and a secret deal was allegedly set up whereby he got involved and has set up these new policies for the British government, which even an unelected situation, which is even worse.
And these are policies around illegal file sharing.
Yeah, illegal file sharing and all that kind of stuff, which is some of the reason that the pressure that obviously Conroy has on him as well from the Hollywood and that kind of thing. Right. They're saying, you know, we want these filters in place also.
The filter, though, that doesn't, as it's proposed, doesn't include file sharing.
It doesn't. And people can just use something like iPredator, which is a VPN that allows you to bypass any filter.
VPN, virtual private network.
Yeah.
So what does that do?
It allows you to kind of scoot through and set up. You basically do a connection to a server outside of Australia. Then from there you can access anything you want. iPredator was the program created by the guys that made the Pirate Bay, who have been attacked a lot for that kind of stuff.
Anyway, I do recommend the Stephen Conroy transcript. We've broken out various bits.
Not all of it.
Evening reading on the way to bed.
We've broken out the good bits, and you can find it at mumbrella.com.au. Now, in case you haven't heard, the iPad is finally making its debut in Australia. Literally, as you'll be hearing this podcast, the first people who've bought it in Australia will have it in their hands and very excited they'll be. But nobody is quite as excited as the Australian newspaper is. In just the last couple of months, it's published dozens of stories about the iPad, and we wrapped up some of them this week. Camille, why do you reckon the Aussies is getting so excited?
It's probably got very little to do with the fact that they're launching their very own iPad app. Probably very little to do with the fact that Rupert Murdoch, its owner, has proclaimed it may well be the saving of the newspaper industry. So none of those points. It's just because it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's it's kind of interesting, isn't it? It's got to the crunch now when it comes to paid content. Over in the UK, the paywall is teetering now. In fact, it may even have gone up by the time people are listening to this. So we'll know quite soon whether people are actually paying to look at the Times and the Sunday Times online.
Tim, I'm quite impressed you said debut as well. Thanks for that.
What would you have preferred?
I'm just so used to the Australian sports commentator saying debut. Yeah. Drives me nuts.
Anyway, the iPad, will you be getting yourself one?
I will be getting myself one. I don't think I'll stand the queue. The queue's there at the moment. I don't really think I'll go in the queue 24 hours beforehand. But yeah, I'll be picking one up probably next month.
And what will you do with it? How do you think you'll use it?
I'll be using it when I'm travelling. I'll be using it around the house probably. Just sitting on the sofa. I think it's the ultimate sofa toy, I think. But I also want to use it for presentations because I use Pages and Keynote, which is Mac's version of Word and PowerPoint. So I use them for presentations. So I want the ability, and you can download the apps as well. So you build your own presentations, which is really useful.
And the future of newspapers?
They'll probably be on the iPad.
So Murdoch's right then.
Well, to be honest, they won't. They'll probably be e-ink or something like that down the line where people just have a slight piece of paper that's...
But I guess speaking of apps, iPad apps, it seems the fallout between Apple and Steve Jobs and Adobe seems to have had a bit of a flow-on effect on the ABC. So its popular catch-up TV service, iView, apparently isn't going to... They're not going to launch an iPad app version of it for another couple of months.
That's because it's a flash-based service, is it not?
Mm. Exactly that, yeah. So this also came out of the Senate Estimates hearing, because Mark Scott from the ABC was also speaking. And, yeah, it emerged that for the last couple of months they've been building the iView player in a flash-based platform.
Why?
For the iPad. Because, of course, at that stage, they didn't know that Apple wouldn't support it.
Everybody knew. Apple have always stated they wouldn't be supporting Flash. That's just a bunch of numpties not listening. Seriously, what a waste of taxpayers' money there. Everybody knew that Jobs had an issue with Flash. He went on for the last 3 years about battery life. He went on about the problems it caused with the browser. Everybody knows that he was going to have HTML5. And I'm sorry, but that's not an excuse saying that we thought Flash might be coming out on it. Sorry, I'm just ranting, because the original, when they unveiled the iPad, they even showed it with the little logo, and him, Steve Jobs, said he wanted Flash. I mean, come on. Start listening, people.
You should have been their consultant, Scott.
No, I just think they should listen. It's not that hard.
Mm. On to TV ratings. Camille, still all about MasterChef?
It is. It is, in a sense that it consistently wins the three main advertiser-friendly demographics, so 16 to 39s, 18 to 49s, 25 to 54s. But if you break it out in terms of the main metro markets, and this is live overnight viewing, it's probably number one consistently in Melbourne, but in the other markets, not so much. So Sydney, Channel 7 News is quite popular, and in other states as well, other capital cities, we've got Nine News.
It's been interesting looking at the breakdown in the different states over a couple of programs, isn't it? It was the same with, what was it we were talking about in the office? Was it Underbelly that is actually most popular in Sydney, a bit less popular in Melbourne, and in the other major cities, again, a bit less popular again? I think sort of down in sixth place or something like that when we were looking at those.
Yeah.
I suppose the other thing, I'm going to take issue with you slightly on one of the stories that you wrote this week, which was...
Dig the task.
Well, we had Survivor limping to the finale.
You couldn't just bring it up as I was writing it or just as I published it?
No, it was only when somebody else commented on it in the comment stream, and I thought, they're right. Survivor on paper didn't do terribly well. I'm the voice of the reader. I'm the reader's advocate in the room.
Right.
It finished with a bit under 1.1 million for the... finale of Survivor, which was 13th for the night. But I'd maybe make the argument, and as our reader made the argument, for something that was on air for about 3 hours, that's a pretty good average across a whole night.
Okay, we don't usually look at 3 hour length shows. Usually 1 or 2 hours, such as the Pacific, where we do see a dropout, a fallout. But maybe it is a good point. But again, I couldn't say that that's correct or not. What would you say, Tim?
I put it to you that Nine won the night that night.
Well, it did. It did win the night by just a fraction. They won. They got 26.7%. Seven got 26.1%. So it wasn't by far and away the winner for the night.
Still with TV, though. Sorry, Scott, you were going to...
No, I'm just laughing at you both. It's much easier for me to sit here and mock you both.
Well, please do, but I will get your view on this next one. Factual reality TV, docudramas, docu-soaps, whatever we want to call it.
I went on a rant last week. You want another one this week?
Yeah, we'll have another one. So we've had fly-on-the-wall shows about Lifesavers, obviously, Bondi Rescue and the various spin-offs.
Fitch.
Lots of police ones. Police Dogs has been a recent one. And now we have Parking Rangers.
Parking Rangers, yeah. Apparently, Channel 9 is producing a new factual reality TV show, speaking to councils around the country to create a show about parking officers and council rangers, and showing the very human, taking a human approach to what these rangers have to deal with on a day-to-day basis, such as giving fines. And
the working title is The Enforcers, apparently.
That's apparently one of the working titles, but it hasn't really been, it's still to be confirmed. And I think Seven's planning on doing a similar show as well. So another Me Too.
Scott, how do you feel about parking inspectors?
Let's just have a general consensus in the room here. Tim, Parking Rangers, yes or no?
As a program?
Yes.
I would point to a programme in the UK that I still remember, although it was probably more than a decade ago, called The Clampers.
Yep, I remember
it. And it was compelling viewing, mainly because there were people being baddies, you know, enjoying putting parking tickets on cars, you know, being the bad guys. And that almost, you know, that was what made it such compelling viewing, was the fact that it was, you know, such a sort of dramatic... You know, it was pantomime.
How many times have you seen somebody get a parking ticket and then exploding at someone? How many times have you seen it in the street?
I tell you, if you have a look on YouTube, there's some great clips of people doing precisely that.
But, I mean, is that what we really want?
Yes.
Is that type of television we really want people to watch?
Television
was originally created to entertain and educate, but, I mean, this level of...
This is one of those things, though, so much is how it's made.
Absolutely, but...
Because again, there was a documentary.
I'm going to do my rant again.
Okay, well, I'm going to defend another. There was another documentary in the UK more recently.
This isn't a documentary, though. This is
a documentary drama. Anyway, there was a fly on the wall documentary in the UK, which very much told the story from the point of view of traffic wardens or rangers, as we call them here.
Look, we know
it was very much. But what this program did was it made it clear what a tough job they do, how badly the public treat them, and it gave a little insight into the world. And that's the thing.
But
we don't know yet how the program will be.
Everybody knows that parking rangers get a lot of abuse. Everybody knows that because every one of us has got to that, ran to the car for that last minute, saw them getting the ticket and lost it because we're having a bad day. You know what? Other people get abused too, but I'm just sick of this. But
can't you say
find something that let's fight?
Can't you say though? Everybody knows that lifesavers save people's life at Bondi.
Yeah,
it's a popular program.
The program and enjoyed it yet.
It's a popular program.
Exactly, honestly, it has rated very well. So you know, not everyone is in your agrees
in
with
my
you.
Moron category.
I was listening back to this, and you've had a week to think about it. I put to you last week, you've got 2 hours of schedule on a Wednesday night to fill. What are you going to do with the show? I'd have a look in America and see what they had.
Tim, I've been working so hard this week, I don't have time to think about your little two-hour scheduling slot. When they start paying me for it, I'll come up
working,
with stuff.
Working so hard in the pub. Now, what do you think of this, Scott? The Gruen transfer is returning next month.
Cool.
For all those
quite good.
Quite good. You like that? Yeah. Approval from Scott. Yeah. Everyone watch it. Scott loves it.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm big thumbs up for me for the Gruen transfer as well. I guess the big question is
stick out your pipe and smoke
third series. Are there enough topics for them to carry
stick
on talking about?
Somewhere.
Will you please stay focused, people? So Gruen transfer third series. To me, one of the issues is is there enough new stuff still to talk about?
Well, I wasn't here when it was actually on, but I heard a lot about it actually in the UK. Does it depend a lot on how good the ads are as well in terms of what they can talk about as well as generating, you know, situations of creating their own ads?
Yeah, so the general format is there'll be a topic or a couple of topics which will sort of be illustrated by, you know, some ads from around the world. So it might just be on, you know, how the ad industry sells health and aging to us or something like that with some examples. But then the impossible brief is one of the great things, you know, where it's can you take a really tough sales pitch, like for instance 100% there for the taking, which was about invading New Zealand. I think it's got another series in it.
3D TV. It's the word, it's the flavour of the month, of the year, I think. So Foxtel's Fox Sports clocked up an Australian first this week with a 3D broadcast of the Socceroos friendly on Monday on a separate 3D channel. To follow was Nine with the first 3D broadcast of the State of Origin match. And SBS is going to be putting up the World Cup matches in 3D as well. So, Tim, the first one with Foxtel and with Nine, was it a success?
Well, we sort of don't know. That's half of the issue because it hasn't been measured. So this all gets a bit boring and technical, but Oztam, which is the body that measures it, needs effectively 8 weeks' notice. So one of the things that meant was that we didn't know when the digital channels first launched, whether, you know, exactly what sort of audiences they were drawing. My guess is in the very low thousands, 5,000,
10,000. Well, there's 3,500 Samsung 3D TVs sold, I think.
Now, you're one of the 3D TV
owners.
Did you actually take the trouble to watch
I was at Sydney Social Media Club on Monday night, so I missed the game. I was catching up in live tweets to see what score was and everything. Then I caught the highlights afterwards.
And how about State of Origin this week on Nine was also in 3D? Did you catch that?
I don't watch rugby league.
So far, in Australia, there have been two broadcasts in 3D. You're the only person I know who's taken the trouble to invest in a 3D TV.
Yep.
Which cost you, what, $3,500?
There's a promo Blu-ray, 3D Blu-ray player that comes with it and
but
stuff.
But you didn't actually bother to watch the 3D broadcasts.
I'm going to tell you something that's even freaking you out even more. The TV's in my room, and I don't even have an aerial attached to it. I have Foxtel and other room in the main room, but
so you just bought it for the sake of saying I've got a 3D TV?
No, I use it for movies and video games because it converts any video game or movie into 3D. So I play like Red Dead Redemption. I'm playing at the moment. I play that in 3D.
So that's a gaming. It's a gaming device rather than a
I'm using
TV
it as gaming, but and I've watched movies on it, which is, you know, the higher depth the movie, the better the 3D is type thing, and it's on the fly. But no, I mean, for the World Cup, I'm upgrading to IQ and putting a box in my room for the World Cup so that I can watch 3D World Cup.
And is the IQ? Does the IQ support recording in 3D as well?
No idea yet.
The reason for asking is I know that TiVo, which is the sort of alternative box which is being promoted by Seven here, is promoting itself as the best way to record 3D. So rather curiously this week, they put out a press release kind of making the argument, hey, if you haven't yet bought a 3D TV, you can record the 3D broadcasts so that you can watch them later, which...
There's a bizarre press release.
It seemed a bit desperate to
me. Who's doing a PR for that?
It's done in-house by Seven, so... So, yeah, again, we don't know quite how many TiVo units have been sold, but we guess not many.
Still on TV, yet again, Google's now getting in on the action, isn't it, Tim, with the launch later this year of a Google Power TV set.
Yeah, this is interesting. What's because I think the purists would argue, hey, this isn't actually doing anything that couldn't be done already because, you know, anyone who is reasonably savvy and wants to can... play YouTube through their telly. But I think perhaps what will make the difference is there's a couple of deals in place, one with Sony and the other with, was it Logitech? Was that the other company involved? I think it was, who are creating the set-top box to go with it. So effectively, it's a really neat piece of navigation, which means that you'll easily be able to switch back and forth from looking at YouTube, surfing the web generally, or just watching traditional TV.
I can do that on my new TV as well. I mean, my Samsung's got YouTube application built in, so you can just pull up any YouTube channel. I can surf the web with it. So
I think the key thing...
I'm just curious what the difference is.
That's the thing. I think the key thing is going to be the guide, the interface, which obviously is what Google's developing. So it'll have a Google Chrome browser... Yep. Integrated as well.
We need a keyboard then, otherwise it's that horrible clicking left, right and up and down with the D-pad.
Well, I suppose that's the thing, isn't it? Because again, isn't it this the Google thing, the Apple thing, is they'll take a piece of technology that previously exists, and you know, arguably this is Apple TV, Airbox, and they just make it a bit easier for non-techie people.
But Apple TV can take a wireless keyboard. Will the new TVs be able to take a wireless keyboard, you know?
I mean, one would certainly expect so, you know, even if it's not initially.
Sure, don't know yet.
Absolutely. Well, it launches later this year, autumn northern time, which will be spring our time. No news yet whether it will come straight away to Australia, though. Now, with the FIFA World Cup just around the corner, the ads are coming in thick and fast. One standout, certainly for me, was by Whedon and Kennedy in Amsterdam for their Nike ad, the three-minute epic. 6 million views at the time of writing. It's probably up to 7 by now. Scott, do you like that ad?
I love the ad. Well, I do love the ad. I mean, it's fantastic. The production on it's superb. You know, I guess you ready for the World Cup. On the flip side of that, I look at how much did that ad actually cost them?
It's very expensive.
Well, it's probably not that expensive when you weigh up, but it's just how much they're sponsoring these guys for already, and part of the contracts will already say you must appear in 2 ads a year or something like that for us, and they just went, right, getting them all into one big basket for this. But the production values are huge, and, you know, to get... like Wayne Rooney with the ginger beard hanging out of his caravan.
That's
and stuff.
That's quite funny, actually.
Yes, because it sort of follows the alternative timelines. You know, first you've got Rooney making a pass that gets intercepted, and then he's a bozo who ends up living in a caravan. Versus Rooney scores, and you've got him being knighted by the Queen. So you've got these two alternative us. My question was: do you think that straggly old beard? Do you think it was real?
No. I don't think so, because we would have seen him grow the beard over his, you know...
That was my question.
During the recent bunch of games.
I was going to say, does that mean you have to spend like 2 weeks growing that beard?
Is that a serious question, Tim?
Yeah, no,
it's a serious question until I thought about it, and now I realise it was a naive question.
The advert gets you ready for the World Cup, and it does encapsulate what the World Cup is about. You know, you've got, 1.5 billion people around the world watching it. You know, it is the world game for
all of whom
reason.
Are thinking, what if it's my team? And to me, that's the
insight. Well, not me, because Scotland never made it through this year, but yeah... And are you, now, you've been in Australia for how long, Tim?
About 3.5 years.
Are you supporting England or Australia?
I'm supporting England.
Yeah, I'm supporting Australia.
Yeah, you know, I guess my question would be, if I became a citizen, which would I cheer on? And that would become a difficult question.
Really? You'd give up your heritage that quickly?
I don't know. I don't know.
Interesting.
Certainly, you know, I really like the plucky Socceroos to do well. I was pleased they staggered to a victory against New Zealand.
I just can't call them the Socceroos. I think it's a horrible name.
How about the plucky Socceroos?
Plucky.
Well, speaking of World Cup themed ads, this week we announced the winner of April's Ad of the Month competition from Umbrella.
Ooh.
And it was Optus. It was Optus's World Cup. We have very cheap production budgets here. We have to do our own sound effects.
If you can call that a sound effect.
Yeah. Dun dun dun.
Okay, it was Optus for its World Cup themed ad. It was by MNC Saatchi.
Yeah, this was quite a nice one. This idea that you've got a secret training camp where the players go and play football against various South African animals, although I wasn't aware there were tigers in South Africa.
That doesn't make a difference.
but yes, it was. It was very nicely produced, an amazing piece of CGI. Quite tightly fought battle this time as well.
Some good
adverts
out there.
It was in keeping with the brand. Obviously, Optus, they do animals, so they had animals. They're a partner for the World Cup as a mobile partner. So
yeah, it was a good ad.
Sorry, a telco partner.
Actually, I'm liking the fact that Optus are doing this streaming direct all the games to your phone. I'll be watching them in bed. We can't sleep. Oh, just get that app in my iPad probably.
Well, that's the thing. 4:30 a.m. is not an ideal time for the TV networks, really, is it? So I've got some sympathy with SBS. It's good for them that they've got the content. Will they have it in another 4 years' time when 10 can stick it on their digital channel? It'll be a different question, of course. But you were a fan of one or two of the other ads.
See, for me, I wouldn't have picked it. I suppose the Optus ad was good as in terms of production values. It was the obvious winner because it is World Cup fever. But for me, I really liked a TV promo on pay TV called Tough Nuts, Crime Investigation Network.
And there's been a fair bit of anticipation about this program as well.
And it was a very simple idea. It just basically showed a kid growing up and in terms of him becoming an older man. And it has the same voiceover of a guy talking about how he became a criminal, basically, from childhood to when he's an older, when he gets older. And it was just very simple. It was, it was very hard-hitting.
And it was well supported in the voting. Very nearly came through and won.
Yeah,
but
I would have voted for it.
I thought the Sunbeam one was crap.
I liked the Sunbeam one. I found myself humming it afterwards.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I kept going
cheery.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Sunbeam one.
Floating Irons, great.
I think the one that I disliked the most was the Motherland one for Coca-Cola.
Again,
I like Motherland, it's just Mother.
It's very, they call it the Motherland.
I know, but Motherland sounds a bit Nazi-ish sometimes. That's what I think about when I hear Motherland.
This was the blokey theme park with lots of fire and iron and
lots
stuff.
Lots of big meats to eat.
I liked it, but it wasn't for you. That's why you didn't like
it. But the thing is, there are lots of ads that isn't for me that I still enjoy.
Doesn't matter though, does it? It wasn't for you.
Well,
it
was
for
target audience.
It was for real men like Scott and myself.
So you didn't like it then?
So you drink Mother?
Nah, don't like the ads. That's it for now. We have to leave. Thank you to my co-hosts, Camille Alacon.
Thank you.
And Scott Rohde.
Thanks, Tim.
And to CBS Interactive for use of their studio. Production was by Georgina Pearson. That was the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Tim Burrows.